Sports-related questions. Okay, so I want to talk about some of the other flavors of dark matter today. We've been so far talking entirely about cold dark matter. That is the most favored candidate. And yet we haven't seen it. And we really should have at this point if it were the WMP that we originally envisioned. And we have not seen it in any of the many direct detection experiments which have succeeded in meeting their targets quite brilliantly, so that as one of the people who does that said, the direct detection experiments have succeeded in failing. It's not that they have failed, it's that they have worked quite well, but they had not found what they were looking for, because it ain't there. Now, as we discussed last time, there are lots of other things, lots of ways to avoid that, but the WMP paradigm, as we originally knew it, is obviously wrong at this point. It could still be a WMP, but you have to have a much, much lower cross-section than is really reasonable. But what is reasonable when we're talking about made-up stuff? Right? So, and I preface it, everything, well, today's discussion with that, because for the vast majority of my career, and for many people still today, they're very convinced that the dark matter is a WMP. And if you press people on it, they will often say things like, oh, well, we didn't really mean that. It could have been anything. There are all these other things. That is gaslighting. We were absolutely sure it was a WMP. And if somebody tells you otherwise, they are gaslighting you and probably themselves, because they really believed it. And now they're like, oh, well, that didn't work out, so I didn't really mean it. Yes, you did. So, but they have not shown up in these many experiments. They were not produced in the LHC, and there is no reason to expect that such a thing would be produced if you could build a particle accelerator that was twice as big, or 2 times as big, or 100 times as powerful. Right? There's no theory there saying, yes, we should do that. Like there was, like the LHC was basically built to detect the Higgs. It did detect the Higgs. There was a good motivation to go and look for that. There's no motivation to build a bigger accelerator, other than that there is a large community of people who, that's what we do, so we want to do it. And there are various forms of indirect detection. Many claims have been made over the years. Oh, this excess gamma ray source, 126 GeV line Fermi, this excess of cosmic rays detected by PAMELA or AMS or any some other experiments. Just none of those have panned out. And so it's just not what we expected. So what else could it be? So if you follow the little question mark link on the homepage, you get to this picture by Tim Tate, who gives a sort of a qualitative, incomplete landscape of possible dark matter models. And I don't know what most of these words mean. Right? And I think most of the people who work on this. So this is very particle physics motivated thing. So there's a little space there for quark nuggets. I know what those are. Warm dark matter, I know what you mean by that. Asymmetric dark matter, I ran into yesterday trying to read up on this stuff. I still don't really understand what it is. There's a whole range of supersymmetry things, and that's where WMPs were supposed to live originally, but there's all this other stuff. Minimal supersymmetry was the thing we had all hoped for, because that's relatively simple. There are other things, self-interacting dark matter, I know what that is. WMPless dark matter, Okay, so you're telling me it's not a wimp, but what is it? You're not telling me what it is. Dark photons. God help me, I know what that means. Light force carriers. So basically, these are interactions that are hypothesized to exist along with the particles. You might actually also have new forces that operate only in the dark sector, so sort of electromagnetism. Dark interactions, yeah. So dark photons, light weak force carriers like Wimpino, Wenos, I don't know, just Wenos. You just make things up, right? Anyway, some of these come in. Sterile neutrinos, I sort of know what those are. Axions have been an idea for a while because axions were suggested to solve the charge parity problem in quantum chromodynamics back in the 70s, and it was realized sometime after that that you could have certain versions of axions that would behave as the dark matter, but not necessarily. Like, you could have these particles to do what they were hypothesized to do for quantum chromodynamics and not have anything at all to do with the dark matter problem. So you could detect those, and it might not have that, or it might not have it's a big miss. And then there's little Higgs, littlest Higgs, I don't know, warped extra dimensions. So yeah, there's a whole section here for extra dimensions, because you can have extra dimensions that are compactified, curled up so you don't see them, and then you can have Kaluza-Klein states that have mass and act like dark matter. Or so I'm told. I just said a bunch of words that don't really make sense to me, but that's one of the ideas that's out there. So I want to attempt to give you an overview of some of these ideas, just so you're at least vaguely familiar with the words and aren't surprised at them when you see things like this.
I don't expect you to understand any of it, because I don't claim to understand it. And I will try to be a tour guide to this sort of strange nightmare world that we've invented. And as I was reading up on this, if you search the literature for non-WIMP dark matter, you get a couple reviews, one from 20 years ago and one from a decade ago, where they held a whole conference at Snowmass to work out what could go on. So some of what I say will be based on that. Right. Many dozens of pages written on it. But what I realize is that there are, again, there's a divergence of communities in the way they even think about other kinds of dark matter. Because for astronomers, we want to have categories of how the dark matter behaves. And for particle physicists, you want to know types of hypothetical particles that you might be able to look for. So you can have lots of different kinds of cold dark matter. Couldn't be, if it's not a regular WIMP, it might be some flavors of axion, light dark matter, these things that are lower mass than the Weinberg limit by whatever hand waving you need to do to allow that, or very heavy, like WIMPzillas. So you can make up lots of particle physics particles that behave like cold dark matter as far as us astronomers are concerned. So there are lots of particles there, but they're all cold dark matter. Then you can have other things that are different flavors. Right, we talked about hot dark matter early in the course. One could also have warm dark matter, could have self-interacting dark matter. That's something that lives, or was it? Oh, here it is. So basically, it needs these force carriers to be active in the dark sector so that the dark matter particles can interact with each other. This has nothing to do with anything in our sector. These things don't interact with standard model particles at all, but they're interacting with each other with these new forces. Something called fuzzy dark matter, superfluid dark matter, and et cetera. There are lots of things you can make up here. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of march through these things and discuss some of what all. Can go on. I made a list of all the ideas that the two different reviews made, and the decade makes a difference. A lot of the same names and suspects come up, but others don't. So just the history of ideas and what comes in and out of favor. But remember, one of the motivations we need this stuff for is to grow structure, large-scale structure in the universe, right? We have to go from the initially smooth condition indicated by the cosmic microwave background to the rich amount of structure we see today. And so these are, I think Ben Board did these simulations just as a sort of an illustration of what you get if you have hot dark matter, cold dark matter, or something in between, warm dark matter. So there is a free streaming scale, basically a mass that is the smallest thing that can form gravitationally given the mass of the particle. And so this is why hot dark matter was excluded fairly early on. This is a free streaming mass of a low mass thing is very large. So if you have, nowadays the neutrino mass is less than 1 eV, but back in the 80s it was possible to imagine it was as big as 30 eV. It's this scale. Notice this depends on the inverse square, so the bigger the mass, the smaller the bigger the mass of the dark matter particle, the smaller the free streaming mass, which is to say the minimum mass of a structure that can form. And the reason for that is that if the hot dark, if the dark matter is very hot, it's moving relativistically, and so it's not inclined to clump up and form structures unless you put a huge amount of mass together, and then it's enough to capture that. And so for a 30 eV hot dark matter particle, that free streaming scale is 4 times 10 to the 15th solar masses. That's just a bit bigger than the largest cluster of galaxies we know about. So that's a big scale, and you don't get anything smaller than that, and so you can't have hot dark matter in this way. So here are the simulations. This is hot dark matter, this is early times and late times, and you can see the same structures form, but in the hot dark matter case, you've just washed out all of the smaller scale structure because of this free streaming. It's just not collecting into. So early on, it was imagined that you could have this hot dark matter, and it would be then a top-down structure formation scenario in which you'd make these sort of cosmic pancakes early on, and then they would fragment and form into galaxy-sized objects, and that just doesn't work. Now, just to do the math here, traditional WIMP of 100 GeV mass corresponds to a free streaming scale of about a 10,000th of the solar mass. Right? So that means you can have dark matter clumping into halos that are smaller than the mass of the sun. Okay, so that's pretty cool. You can bump up and do that, make those tiny, tiny things. And of course, exactly what that scale is depends on what the particle is, what its mass is, and additionally, if it's can be born with extra thermal motion. But for a thermally produced WIMP, this is about the scale, which is essentially zero as far as we are concerned in cosmology. It can make tiny, tiny dark matter halos. And the consequence of that is that you see a lot more small-scale structure, both in the emergent cosmic web at early times and within individual dark matter halos. So here's an object that managed to form. This has no structure internally. This has lots and lots and lots of subhalos. Right? So that's what we've seen before. And not surprisingly, the warm dark matter case is kind of intermediate. There's the same structures, but it's smoothed out. There's some substructure, but not as much. So warm dark matter has the practical effect of truncating the power spectrum. So here's the power spectrum multiplied by k cubed to put it on a beautiful scale as a function of scale. And if it's perfectly cold, you have that black line. And then here's the power spectrum for different masses of order keV. That's typically what people talk about. So instead of 100 GeV lamp, you have maybe a 1 or 10 keV warm dark matter particle, as opposed to a few eV hot dark matter particle. Okay, so keV is the scale for warm dark matter. And this is trying to be a Goldilocks solution, right? The hot dark matter was too hot, and maybe the cold dark matter is a little too cold for various astrophysical problems like the missing satellite problem and the cusp core problem. So maybe there's a temperature that's just right. And so by inserting a mass in this range, you basically cut off the power spectrum at the free streaming scale. Right, so you see that turn down in power as a function of mass. So the most massive one illustrated turns down over here at the smaller scales, and then as you go to lower and lower masses, that moves to larger and larger scale, maybe smaller wave number, larger linear scale. Right, so the range shown here is from 20 keV down to half a keV. And this was thought to be desirable for explaining the missing satellite problem, because you just didn't make all those subhalos. Okay. But one of the problems is that it's a very sharp cutoff. So you really don't make any, whereas you make some here. And there are some very tiny dwarf galaxies. That's part of what the too big to fail problem is getting at, is that there are or should be intermediate mass halos that are not populated by visible galaxies. And yet there are some small galaxies and small halos. So this is not really the right shape to explain the missing satellite problem. It's not just a cutoff. So you could do that. I've also heard it argued that this helps with the cusp core problem. Galaxy dark matter halos, because the central regions become softer. The simulators argue as to what the halo profile ends up looking like, so I'm not sure how much it helps, but at least it goes in the right direction. So warm dark matter is one thing you're talked about. It has some virtues. It's currently out of favor, but it comes in and out like so many of these things. But the big problem to me is that it is a Goldilocks solution. You kind of have to fine tune the mass. It has to be just right. And there's no fundamental reason for that to be the case. Right? We don't know what the heck these particles are. And there's no theory to say, oh, it ought to be 100 GeV the way we had for a WIMP. Right? It's just making it so. Okay, so another idea is this self-interaction of interacting dark matter. So we have I didn't even need to erase this, really. Some interaction, except now it's all dark matter particles. So you have a new mass particle, but you also have new interactions. So just as you have the electromagnetism to mediate forces between us, you might have dark electromagnetism with dark photons that mediate interactions between dark matter particles. And that's why you have this terminology. You hear people talk about dark photons, which sounds crazy, right? But what they mean are force carriers in the dark sector that mediate interactions between the dark matter particles has nothing to do with normal matter. So this is, you know, a scattering diagram. They come in, they scatter off of each other, and that scattering changes the mass distribution in condensed objects like dark matter halos. So you get cusps in dark matter halos because the cold dark matter doesn't interact with itself. It just falls in gravitationally, and it can get as dense as possible. Whereas self-interaction, once you make the density high, then these particles start bumping into each other, and that scattering inserts a sort of a scale, a core radius, into the dark matter halo. So here's the profile of a dark matter halo in a SIDM interaction compared to the dark matter only case. So that's the standard NFW result with a cusp. Here is the SIDM case. That's for dark matter only. You add in a disk and then things change. So the NFW goes from here to here. In this particular simulation, the SIDM halo responds strongly to the infall of the disk, and you get an even denser thing, so that doesn't actually wind up helping you. But simulators differ on all of that. The thing that bugged me more about this is that, you know, you have to make up not just new particles, but new forces. So we're kind of throwing Occam to the curb. Right? It was Occam's day yesterday. Well, forget him. Screw parsimony. We're just going to make up whatever we need. But it also doesn't work simultaneously for both clusters of galaxies and individual galaxies. The scales don't work out. So first, when it does work out, here is a paper advocating for this, long paper. And the idea, the helpful thing, is that you're making a core, and in these low-mass dwarf galaxies, the disk doesn't do much to change the mass distribution because the baryons don't weigh much compared to the dark matter. So you might still be able to solve the cusp core problem in dwarfs. And that blue dotted line is sort of what you'd expect in a standard cold dark matter model. Whereas you get a softer core in SIDM, and that is a plausible description of the data. So we're solving the cusp core problem here. There are big claims as to explain everything else, which I won't go into at great length. Because the big problem here is that you cannot just have one interaction. Right? So mostly you think, okay, you invent a new force, it has some interaction cross-section, and that dictates how likely particles are to scatter off of each other. That doesn't work. So these are constraints as a function of the velocity scale, basically the potential well depth, and the thermal cross-section per unit mass, the way they describe this. So constant, just cross-section, are these lines going up through here, and that's sort of what you would naively first try. Okay, let's give this new interaction some cross-section. And if you ask galaxy data what you need that to be in order to get the cores that we observe in dwarf galaxies, they fall along this line of about 1 cm² per gram. You then go and ask clusters of galaxies the same question, and it's like, no way, man, I can't have that much going on. I get these really giant cores which are not observed in clusters. They may have smaller cores, but it's not the right scale. So instead, these things are over here, and they have limits more like a tenth of what it is here. That's bad, right? So let's throw this idea away. Nope, not yet. As long as we're making up new physics, we can make up an interaction that has a velocity dependence. And so there are quasi-plausible ways of doing this, and they talk about S-wave scattering and P-wave scattering left and right, but the only point is that the kind of scattering can be velocity dependent, and so then you will, instead of getting just a straight line here, you'll get one of these curves that could plausibly go through both the galaxy data
and the cluster data.
Sure.
We can do that, right. But we're not
Sticking with parsimony here, and that was the thing that bugged me about this idea in the first place. Plus the fact that it has nothing to do with the baryons. Remember, we learned early on that there's a lot of connection between the distribution of baryons and the distribution of dark matter. So we want an interaction that does that, and this, by construction, chooses to ignore the baryons. And that's what you get if you come at it from a cosmological perspective as opposed to a galaxy dynamics perspective. Yes, we need dark matter, but different kinds. Okay. Do interrupt me and ask questions, because I'm just going to tell you about all these crazy things I've read about otherwise. So then there's fuzzy dark matter that got popular quite a decade ago. Haven't heard much about it lately. So the idea here now is that we have really lightweight scalar particles. I mean, super lightweight, 10 to the minus 22 EV, or even less, I've heard argued. And the nifty thing about that is if you make the mass very low, then the Broglie scale and Compton wavelengths of order a parsec or bigger if you make the mass lower. And so you have quantum effects that manifest on astrophysical scales. Right? So that's weird. And so you get wave interference behavior between all these particles, and these interference patterns basically cause what are called soliton cores to form. It's basically a region of constant density that for a dark matter halo is spherical. For one of the cosmic filaments it's forming, it's cylindrical. But within that region, the density is constant. And again, that's what we need, right? We want a constant density core or something close to that to explain the cusp core problem. So this is what this did for us, was to make dark matter halos and constant density cores. So the big pro here is that that could address the cusp core problem. It turns out when you try to work out what that density is in detail, sure, the density is constant, but it's way too high. So you form this core. So where NFW does something like that, and the data do something like that, soliton cores do something like this. It's like, okay, that's great, but can you bring it down a few orders of magnitude? And people are still working on that, so maybe it's possible, but that's sort of where that at is at. So trying to keep track of this goes all the way back to 2000.
These ideas never die once they get out there. Okay, so that's what fuzzy dark matter is, and it's fuzzy because of that long wavelength, right? It's not a point mass the way a WIMP is, or black hole for that matter. It's spread out on astrophysical scales in a quantum sense. Okay. Superfluid dark matter. This was a nifty idea. I also think it doesn't work. But the idea here is that you have a dark matter particle that can form a Bose-Einstein condensate. So it's a boson. Have a superfluid state, it's essentially very cold, just like you see in the lab, the Bose-Einstein states. And the nifty idea here is that this dark matter halos that you form have a superfluid core. You have to work a bit to get the radius of that right, but that superfluid core doesn't just give you a core in the sense of the cusp core density profile, but it's basically gives you Mond-like behavior, which is what you really need at galaxy scales.
So of all the ideas I've discussed so far, this is the first one that actually is informed by galaxy phenomenology. The rest of them are just, oh, we need extra mass. What can we do to get there? So Justin Khoury has pursued this a lot. And it's a nifty idea in that you get Mond-like behavior on galaxy scales, but still manage to retain the apparent successes of cold dark matter on the larger cosmological scales. So it's a bit of a hybrid that tries to get the best of both worlds, which is what we want, really. You can work through some constraints. The mass, upper limit on that is basically the density scaled by the cube of the velocity, depends on phase space. That 1/4 is familiar, right? That comes in. And for a Milky Way-like galaxy, that works out to an upper limit of about 3 eV. So that's interesting. It's a particle of sort of eV mass. Could be much less, but that's the limit. And it doesn't just behave as hot dark matter because it has this possibility of making Bose-Einstein condensates, the critical temperature for which is rather like the real ones in the lab, a quarter millikelvin, very small. In principle, it could be as large as 2 Kelvin, but more practically, it needs to be very small. But that's okay. That's the way these things get. Does this make any sense to you? These colors look right to you, yeah.
How could something even get that cold? Like, obviously, it wouldn't be subject to, like, the CMB per se, but wouldn't you expect the dark matter to be of, like, the same order in temperature?
So if it is thermally produced like a WIMP, then yes, it's got to start out that way. But I think this is just not interacting with anything, and the cooling happens as the condensation happens, if I understand it right, which I probably do not. I mean, you have to work hard to cool real bosons in the lab, right, to make one of these things. So I don't know that.
the other issue with that is it doesn't really work, right? This gives you the right behavior within a core radius, but the data want the behavior to kick in at an acceleration scale. And so that is something we've struggled with, and Tobias has shown this doesn't really work for the lensing signal that we observe. I'll say it couldn't be tweaked to make it so, but that's sort of where we're at. Okay. So there's a lot of et cetera here. Let me see if I want to write any of these things down. Oh, I didn't say anything. Yeah, let me say a few things here.
Yeah. Do you know anything about, like, the little Higgs versus littlest Higgs?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You know anything about that?
No.
Yeah, I just, reading that, noticed that, and I hadn't noticed it before. I didn't come across the reviews I read, so I don't even know what to mean by that.
Okay.
Like I said, in many supersymmetric theories that lead you to a dark sector like WIMPs, then you do expect some splitting in the Higgs state. So maybe it's related to that somehow, but we don't see any evidence for that in the LHC. And of course, you can play games to hide that, but. I did mention sterile neutrinos. Again, it's basically normal neutrinos have a left-handed chirality. The idea is just, well, why not have right-handed particles? Okay. But they cannot interact weakly, so though we call them neutrinos, they are not active neutrinos in the sense of interacting through the weak nuclear force. So, hence, sterile. So really, they're just a particle. mass can be anything. I've heard ranges quoted from 1 EV to 10 to the 15 GeV, so pick a number. To get structure right, you do want them to be heavier, at least 10 KeV. That's the warm dark matter scale. So these things are often invoked as being a candidate for warm dark matter. You could have dark matter that is warm in the thermal sense that we talked about without being a sterile neutrino, but a sterile neutrino is a good candidate for a warm dark matter. Their production is non-thermal, so getting the abundance right sort of depends on the production mechanism, which is very dependent, even if they exist, in fact. And so there is some laboratory evidence that suggests there might be such a particle, but that doesn't mean it exists in the right cosmic abundance to be the dark matter. So that would be something else one would have to show, and it's still controversial whether that's true or not. Since I mentioned neutrinos and warm dark matter, remember, normal neutrinos are basically a form of hot dark matter that we know about. You had a three mass states, might be 92.5, and I haven't worked through it recently, but the cosmic density in neutrinos follows from this. And we know that there's a range in this range from 0.06 to 0.12 eV, tiny number compared to that. So the mass density of neutrinos is small. But not entirely negligible. Right, remember the baryon density is 0.04, 0.05, somewhere in there. Well, it's less than that, right? An x h squared there. Right, so the neutrino density, while less than that of baryons, is within hailing distance of it, you know, factor 5 to 10 or something, right? So maybe it's a tenth. It's at least a tenth, because this is the lower limit. And this upper limit assumes a lot about structure formation, right? Basically, that limit is there because you can't have too much free streaming or you don't make the smallest objects. So that assumes we understand how structure formation works, but granted that assumption, that's a strong limit that places that. If that assumption doesn't hold, then this could be rather larger and you might get something comparable to the baryon density. So while it's not enough to be the dark matter in a cosmic sense, it's not entirely negligible. It's a, you know, non-trivial fraction of the baryonic density we know about, which is kind of interesting. No obvious reason these sheets should be of the same order of magnitude. There's light dark matter. I mentioned that as things that violate the Lee-Weinberg limit of 2 GeV. And that limit comes about from thermal production, right? Just that miracle argument that we made before, that the density scales with the mass. If you make the mass too low, then you way overproduce the mass density of the relic particles. So there's that limit. You can do things to get around that, and the way to do this is usually from non-thermal scalar particles. on thermal, I understand, that means you can't have thermal production where everything is in equilibrium in the early universe and then freezes out and leaves behind a relative density that's dictated by that interaction rate. That's what gives you the limp miracle. This has to violate that, so you have to have a non-thermal distribution to start with. You have to make that scalar particles or something particle physicists care about. Kaluza-Klein. We'll see this every once in a while. I love this quote. These are possible states. States is a very generic word. In theories with extra dimensions. So in string theory, having a bunch of higher dimensions than four is all the rage, or at least it was. I think it still is, because people just get lost there. These extra dimensions have to be compactified, basically only appear on tiny scales, or else we'd notice them macroscopically. And then if you have those things, you can have states in those things that effectively have mass and therefore effectively act like dark matter. And so that's usually what is meant when you hear people talk about Kaluza-Klein dark matter. The available field for that is, you know, like 10 to the 500. It's ridiculous how many theories you can consider. So it's hard to say anything directly about that. Back to traditional cold dark matter that's not traditional WIMPs. You can have WIMPzillas, which are very heavy. So there is a unitarity bound for the dark matter particle mass. It's about 34 TeV, at least for the amount of that number. It could be higher, but then it gives you too much dark matter. So that depends on the cold dark matter having a cosmic density about 0.12, 0.11, somewhere there, which is what we need observationally. You can also get away with things that are out of thermal equilibrium. So this is a big mass already. It's a lot more than 100 GeV. But you could get things that are greater than 10 to the 10 GeV, if non-thermal. Now, of course, the whole virtue of WIMPs was that they were thermally produced. So you can have non-thermal theories, but that what you're really saying is that I've given up on the WIMP miracle and I'm just going to make up whatever spectrum I like. So that requires extra justification. This is still a small mass, but you have to worry when the powers get large that you're not talking about things that have the mass of baseball or something like that, right? So 10 to the 23 GeV would be a mole of protons, right? So it's not quite macroscopic, but it's getting there. And then there are all sorts of other things that people talk about, cue balls. Mirror matter, JAMPs, or charged massive particles. I don't know how you manage to have dark matter if it's charged. I've even heard people talking of milli-charged dark matter. Right? Quantums of charge come in a third, or quarks. So why not 0.01? Because that makes no sense, but okay, whatever. D matter, I have no idea what that means.
Dark matter.
Kryptons, nothing to do with Superman, I don't think. super weakly interacting dark matter.
Do you know what the Q in cue balls means?
No.
Okay.
No,
to be is what a cue ball is, yeah. It's kind of, so it's on a scalar field, complex scalar field, okay, that's right. Essentially, you can make something like a, do you know what boson stars are?
Boson stars?
Yes, q-balls are essentially boson stars, but you make them on a different scale.
Huh.
So it's a little bit like the superfluid dark matter halo, actually.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, think of it as a tiny microscopic halo.
Okay.
It's like a, so the idea is that you can push a lot of bosons in a single place.
And so then, it's a sort of condensate, so
yeah,
it's a composite particle,
yeah,
dark
yeah
matter particle. Okay.
And it can live on its own, you don't need any variants or whatever in our galaxy, you can just that you can make a, so in superfluid dark matter you can make a halo without the rest of the galaxy in principle. And it would be just like a bunch of bosons piled up on each other, because you can pile up bosons, like in quantum fermions, you can't pile them up.
Okay.
And a cube ball is something like that. Like usually when people say q-ball, they mean the thing this. So the numbers you put in your Lagrangian in your theory, they are such that these things tiny.
So they behave particle-like, but they're really a composite thing because you've piled a bunch of things bosonically on top of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Essentially.
So yeah, the super weakly interacting DM, I don't know what that means, if that just means a really low cross-section for WIMPs, or if there is some new interaction that is just very weak. Brain world DM, so brains are an extension of strings into higher dimensions, right? String is one dimensional, brain can be two or more dimensional. So maybe you have our universe living near to a brain and has dark matter on it. It's related to mirror matter. And there's actually, this sounds easy by comparison, heavy fourth gen neutrinos, right? So there are three generations of neutrinos. Maybe there's a fourth, probably not, but if there is, maybe it's real heavy. So those are just some of the things I ran into in this. This is the older reviewed by Bertone, Huber, and Silk back in 2004. Yeah, and then in the more recent one, they mentioned asymmetric dark matter, but I forget what that is. They also mentioned black holes, so that comes up and down. Super heavy dark matter is there, supersymmetric cue balls, so I guess now it's cue ball condensates made out of supersymmetric particles. Supersymmetric non-WIMPs, right? You can have other particles in supersymmetry beside the obvious WIMPs. Super WIMPs. I don't know what makes them super, but that's one of the words that gets thrown around. So there's just a whole mess of this. And this is one of the things that concerned me a long time ago, because if you look at my dark matter tree, right? Back to that. Right, so here's gravitational solutions, dark matter solutions, baryonic dark matter, non-baryonic dark matter, flavors of cold dark matter, neutrinos for hot dark matter, or question mark. Because already when I drew this in 1995, it's like, well, we could always come up with something else. Couldn't we? And that's both good and bad. If we trim off all the rest of the tree, we're not done. On the other hand, how do we know when to stop? Sort of an important thing in the philosophy of science to know when the heck to stop. Right, that is the whole principle of falsifiability. That's not a physical theory unless you can prove that it's wrong. And here, we can just make up anything, right? If we actually figured out how to detect all of these things and looked for each in turn and failed to find each one in turn, we can always make up something new. So how do we know that the whole picture is just cuckoo? Right? We don't. We can't. That really disturbs me deeply from a philosophical point of view, because this is really on the borderline of the definition of science. You can prove dark matter, or at least you can corroborate it by actually detecting the predicted dark matter particles in the right density with the right properties, and that's what we had hoped would happen with LIMS, but didn't. On the other hand, you cannot falsify it. You can't say, okay, we looked for it, so it's not there. What you can do is say, we looked for it with this sensitivity over this range and did not detect it in that range, but there is a practically infinite range that you can never search. So how do you know if we're barking up the wrong tree? All right. So some figures from this more recent review, the snow mass working group. So here are some of the names we've discussed. Axions are a popular one because they came up early in the discussion. And so I remember thinking, okay, it can't be neutrinos. And then it turned out neutrinos did have mass, but not enough. So if it's not a WIMP, then it must be an axion. And that's entirely the order predicated by the order in which we had those ideas. Black holes up here at the high mass end. Look at the range on this scale, right? We're going from masses of 10 to the minus 15 GeV up to 10 to the 50 GeV. That's about 2 moons, right? So remember, the moon came up in your homework problem. So that's right at the upper limit of something you could have without violating the microlensing results. Well, you can have anything else over these, what, 65 orders of magnitude in mass. There's a proton mass, the WIMP mass around 100 GeV. So there is a traditional WIMP. And this is the cross-section relative to a xenon nucleus, because people have built these big xenon tanks. And they were working on building them when this was done, so that was present in everybody's mind as a potential detector. You can have WIMPzillas, which is these more massive things up here. I don't know what the hell moduli are. Q-balls up here, at least as they define it. Presumably those are not supersymmetric Q-balls, just ordinary Q-balls. Sterile neutrinos. And so you see some of these things, there's definitely a window in which you can look for them, but there's a whole lot of white space where you could look until you make up particles here, there, wherever. Right, so let's focus a little bit more on axions. Because like I said, this was, if not WIMPs, surely it was axions. Now, axions were first invented for completely unrelated reasons, trying to fix the strong charge parity problem in quantum chromodynamics. And you can do that. You can have these particles and not have them have anything to do with dark matter because they didn't come up. But there are some regions in which you could have dark matter axions, and so people have looked at that. And this is the exclusion diagram from a decade ago. Right, so there's the coupling strength against the mass, so very similar to what we saw before for WIMPs. And you can argue that they are not there for a number of reasons, white dwarf and supernova bound. So oftentimes when you make up a new form of dark matter, you may evade all the particle physics constraints, but then you end up doing something weird like having particles that can get trapped in the cores of stars, and then they mess up the nuclear reactions that are going there, change stellar evolution. So that gives you a limit for master physics, but they're not there. I don't remember offhand why axions enter here. other than that, these have to do with nuclear, well, atomic densities, right? So axions would interact with the dense matter of white dwarfs and change their properties somehow, I guess. That's usually how these arguments go. And then there are various experimental things. So this is sort of the range that was nominally expected for oxyon cold dark matter. Here were the limits that had been reached so far. Here is the target limit for this particular experiment, which was supposed to have completed in 2015. So I had not heard the Nobel Prize winning announcement that they found something in this range. Doesn't mean you couldn't have something off the chart here, but that didn't come up. So not to be dissuaded, here is another set of axion limits. Again, interaction cross-section against mass. Now the mass range is getting kind of gratuitous, right? We have 8 orders of magnitude there. All sorts of different constraints here. That band is where you want them to live, to be the cold dark matter, or behave like cold dark matter. Axions don't have 100 GeV masses. They're sub-EV for the most part, so tiny things. But they're not produced thermally either, so they can still act as cold dark matter if they have to, I guess. And so there are regions where you exclude some of these things because of the nuclear physics argument from supernova HB stars. In supernova 1987A, we saw neutrinos arrive at Kamiokande in coincidence with the flash, within a few seconds anyway, and so that puts a lot of strict limits on things. So it basically comes down to this. If axions exist, don't know, and they have a low mass within a specific range, that band, they are of interest as a possible component of cold dark matter. Okay, so maybe. I mean, that's at least something that you can hope to detect in these variety of ways. One clever experiment, the microwave cavities, I think. You basically shine a light on a solid wall and then look for the photons that get through. Of course, the photons don't get through. You have a wall that's completely opaque. But some tiny fraction of them and these things get converted to axions, which get through and then turn into photons. Those haven't seen anything so far. All right, so that's one possibility. Sterile neutrinos, you can also put some constraints on. Apparently these indirectly lead to X-ray signals up in this regime. So here's the mass. Remember, sort of this is the sweet spot for warm dark matter. This is the interaction angle. So that just is unknown, but it has to be small. And so you can still get away with things over here, but there are things to do. And so you get kicks from pulsars because you get, when the neutron star is created in supernova explosions, you can have asymmetric jets of these sterile neutrinos that basically blast out in one direction and jet your neutron star in the other direction, so it actually kicks the pulsar, which is a cool thing to think about. And that does happen conventionally. There are astrophysical reasons why you sometimes get asymmetric supernova explosions, and you see neutron stars that are just flying off at crazy velocities. So this seems to have happened on occasion. So nothing found yet. Strange nuggets, I mentioned because historically, they came up very early. This goes back to an idea by Witten in the mid-80s. And they were forgotten quickly after that. They've re-emerged instead of as strange nuggets, as quark nuggets. Same thing, really. New name, or some people call them macros, though macros is a more generic term. It just means any compact nuclear density thing. So the idea is that you would have detected
sort of stellar mass compact objects in the microlensing. And so that excludes a lot of things. What other things could we possibly make that are compact? Well, nuclear density is very compact. So you put a lot of mass in something like a neutron star. But you can't have it as massive as a standard neutron star. We would have seen it in the microlensing. So you imagine different mass things, and these are basically strange nuggets. The original idea was that if you had a second order phase transition in the early universe, you might have trapped a lot of the baryons into these dense condensates before Big Bang nucleosynthesis. So it's, you don't need any non-standard physics, you need a non-standard phase transition. But that only works if you pack them into something that are stable. And it was, you know, imagined that maybe in nuclear states that were dense enough that the strange quark would persist in a stable state because of the high nuclear density. Neither the phase transition seems to have happened, nor is it clear that nuclear physics actually allows that. But that was the idea. And so you need it to not exceed the density that we know about. And then there are lots of interesting constraints that can be had just by looking at, well, geez, are they smacking into us all the time? What would the flux be if they're the mass of, say, donkeys? And the donkeys are raining down on us at dark matter halo velocities, and so they would deliver sort of the energy of a small atomic bomb into the atmosphere every so often. You might notice that. So it's a question of how often that happens. So there are various limits on here, but it depends on what the heck the things are. So, you know, basically, all of these things that we've been talking about, with the exception of superfluid dark matter, are entirely motivated by these two simple things that we talked about all along, that you need more mass than meets the eye, both for dynamical measurements and for cosmological mass density, but that's sort of the same thing. You ask gravity how much mass you want, and it's more than Big Bang nucleosynthesis allows on a cosmic scale. It's more than what you see in individual galaxies. So rotation curves are flat. Therefore, there is dark matter. That's sort of the entire line of reasoning there. And then combined with the need to grow structure, that you need something, and that's where you get something that is both cold and non-baryonic in order to grow that structure. That's basically the only motivation that goes into this whole field. So I think this is never going to work because it's not considering all the astrophysical inputs that we now know about. But I will say that a really good case can be made for this kind of thing because this is what gives you a third peak. Basically, the power spectrum is not a pure damping spectrum as you would get if you just had baryons. And so that tells you there is something else that is non-baryonic that is oscillating, participating in that oscillation. And any of these things will do. All right, so whatever you come up with has to do all those things. But I'm also saying there are things that we know now astrophysically that do not inform the ongoing theory development. And so you're going to get that kind of thing wrong if you don't know about it. And I'll just end here that we are very sure there is dark matter, and we are very sure that lambda CDM is the right cosmology. There was a time when we were very sure that the dark matter was specifically a WIMP, and that standard CDM was a cosmology.
And if you go back in time, right, of course, there's a scientific revolution. It's the Earth at the center, the Sun at the center. There have been other paradigms in between. So this was the end of the 19th century. This was a popular book written by Agnes Mary Clerk in 1890, 1895, something like that. And it's great that you read this. No competent thinker, basically. Only a moron. With the whole of the available evidence before him can now, it is safe to say, maintain any single nebula to be a star system of coordinate rank with the Milky Way. A practical certainty has been attained that the entire content, stellar and nebula, of the sphere belong to one mighty aggregation. So what she is saying is that we know that the Milky Way is everything. That was the cosmology that came out of the 19th century, and by then we already had photographs, people had surveyed the skies, we knew about spiral nebula, but we didn't know how far away they were. We had stellar spectra, we had not yet classified them, but we understood that stars were stars. And it basically looked like everything was just part of the Milky Way. And the cosmology was one where basically we were just part of this one great aggregation, and then it trailed off into an indefinite void. Right? Space just went out and got emptier and emptier and emptier, and that was it. And there were no other galaxies, as we call them now, no other star system of coordinate rank with the Milky Way. Right? Like Andromeda. So it was like a big deal when Hubble measured the distance to Andromeda, because here all of a sudden was a star system of coordinate rank, i.e. Andromeda is about the same size as the Milky Way. Modern numbers, it's about twice as big. They didn't have the calibration of Cepheids right at the time, so it was smaller back then. But of similar size, it was clearly another island universe as they came. So at this time, people thought there was just one island. And she's really saying, you'd have to be stupid to think otherwise. Because they did know a lot. I mean, she had reason for saying that. And so my only point is that there is nothing that we know for sure that cannot change. So we are absolutely sure it's like the ZDN, that there's some form of dark matter. Come back in 100 years, and we'll see where we're at. All right, that's enough for today. We do have Steve Kirby visiting to give the Journal Club talk, basically a standard colloquium, so anybody who wants to come is welcome in here at 3 o'clock.
In here, right?
Yeah. Okay.